Welcome back to CM Property Digest, your trusted source for in-depth discussions on Africa's real estate and built environment. We delve into key trends shaping the sector, from sustainable development and urban innovation to construction and infrastructure, while highlighting the trailblazers driving change. In this issue, we feature George Oyuga, a certified pension administrator, CPAM, and a respected voice in Kenya's financial sector, with expertise in pension consulting, income drawdown strategies, and financial therapy. As Director of Retirement Solutions at Kuza Asset Management, he champions financial wellness and retirement planning. He has written extensively on personal finance and housing, including in Business Daily Africa, where he explored how KMRC-backed mortgages can expand access to affordable home ownership. George encourages a deeper understanding of housing as a need, distinct from simply owning a house, and advocates for aligning financial goals with sustainable, well-informed strategies. An author and educator, George has published Dance with My Money and Dance with My Pension, which blend emotional intelligence with financial planning. Through his WISER framework, wealth, investments, savings, earnings, relationships, he empowers Kenyans to make smarter, values-driven financial decisions across generations. George Oyuga is a seasoned financial professional in Kenya with extensive expertise in personal finance, retirement planning, and investment solutions. He has held leadership positions in various financial institutions and has been deeply involved in educating the public on financial literacy, including accessible pathways to housing and home ownership. He is recognized for his skill in transforming complex financial information into practical, actionable advice. George remains actively engaged with a wide range of stakeholders in the finance and investment sector, including potential homeowners, policymakers, and financial service providers, fostering meaningful dialogue and collaboration.
Hi, George. It's a pleasure to have you with us on CM Property Digest. Congratulations on the launch of your new book. Maybe you can tell us more about it in our conversation.
Yes, thank you very much for inviting me over. It's my humble pleasure to join you in this feature.
For now, I'd like us to start by introducing yourself as we delve into your role in the financial literacy space and specifically into the housing conversation.
I think you already did justice to my introduction and captured much of what I would have said about myself. If you allow me, I will only add a little spice to it by quoting an unknown source that said something profound. When people are happy, they enjoy the music, but when they are sad, they understand the lyrics. I always find this observation to be very profound, as it resonates with our financial experiences across many sectors, including housing and mortgages. It resonates with my preoccupation with financial literacy, as I help people to learn the applicable financial lyrics while they are still happy. Learning them later, when they are sad, has often left many people nursing financial injuries and financial wounds, which could have been avoided in the first place. Maybe we will have the opportunity to pick a few lyrics today.
For those who may not be familiar with the subject of home ownership, what are some of the top-of-mind things that you would want to bring to their attention?
Thank you for allowing me to clarify this quite early in our conversation. Home ownership, like several other basic needs, is one salient goal that many people find themselves pursuing, but sadly by using misguided channels. More often, we misdiagnose our life needs and apply ourselves financially to pursue their alternate shadows whenever we fail to define our life problems accurately. I believe that there is a difference between a house and housing, between education and schooling, between means of transport and a car, and likewise between means of communication and a phone. In line with our conversation today, if we get our definition right, we will embrace housing as our basic need, and not a house per se. By such, we will be able to approach the housing conversation with a higher level of sobriety, unlike if our focus was just a house. Housing as a need can be addressed through renting, leasing, building, or buying. Buying can be cash or through financing. Financing can be through a SACO, a bank, or alternatively through leveraging the cheaper KMRC-backed mortgages. Among all these options, one must assess and embrace the option that makes the best financial sense for their situation at any given time. Those who fail to see the difference between a house and housing have always found themselves in a financial ditch that leaves them nursing financial injuries and money wounds as they struggle to service relatively expensive mortgages.
How has KMRC made long-term, affordable mortgage financing more accessible to ordinary Kenyans?
I must commend KMRC for their significant intervention in this space. By lending to institutions that then advance affordable mortgages to the public, many people have benefited from more affordable mortgage options through KMRC. As I said earlier, we more often misdiagnose our financial problems. Exposure to very high interest rates have made mortgages from commercial banks to be very expensive, leading to higher default rates as banks continue sitting with bulging, non-performing loan books.
Are there particular demographic groups or income levels that have seen the greatest benefit from KMRC's offerings?
When mortgages are expensive, the lower-earning cadre in society gets crowded out. This is one unique challenge that those in the informal sector face because they cannot access financing or simply because their credit appraisals do not meet certain thresholds due to limited credit histories. Higher interest rates are never in the interest of individuals. I always joke that individuals should desist from referring to it as interest. They should call it the cost of financing. The lending institutions are free to call it interest because it is in their interest anyway. The KMRC-backed mortgages are therefore a blessing to many because they widen the reach to make the loans more affordable.
Every initiative faces its challenges. What are some of the main homeownership obstacles you've encountered among the people that you have interacted with?
One of the things that I have always been deliberate about is to help my clients to reassess and redefine their problem, whether it is a house problem or a housing problem. Some always talk about the dream to stop renting, which I agree is a noble dream. Fortunately, I have on several occasions helped a good number of them to see that by taking a mortgage, they simply change their landlord to be the bank until the day they are done paying off the mortgage loan. The main obstacle to homeownership has been the approach. One needs to assess their financial situation with very clear projections of the journey they are just about to embark on. Some have opted to build instead. Others have opted to delay their gratification and save for the house instead. I think the fact that we have around 30,000 active mortgages only held with our commercial banks out of around 13 million households in Kenya speaks volumes.
With digital transformation reshaping the financial sector, how is the incorporation of digital tools or innovations helping to enhance the housing conversation?
I give a lot of credit to the strides that digital transformation has enabled us to cover, especially in the financial sector. There is a lot of financial literacy being pushed across different platforms. Many people have been exposed to good incubation platforms that one can use for goal savings towards raising the initial deposit towards their housing dreams. On the supply side, we also have a good number of housing projects being showcased with well-curated digital detailing that enables one to get good comparisons of the quality of housing finishes as they sample virtual project visits. The buyer is now able to cite good projects fitting their budgets, and they can now approach financing institutions with particular projects in mind. Where the project is above the KMRC financing threshold, then the financing can be approached in two parts, a KMRC-backed portion and the top-up portion, where the lending may be done at market rate. This makes the overall financing burden more bearable.
In today's evolving housing market, what steps would you recommend for someone interested in getting a house? How can they best position themselves to benefit from these opportunities in both the short and long term?
I think in life one needs at least two houses, a house to live on and a house to live in, and in that order. The house to live on will enable them to get some rental income from it, thus making it an active asset. This will help to accelerate their financial growth to enable them to acquire the next house to live in. More often, when one starts with the house to live in, they would more often get too financially constrained to accommodate a second mortgage. With such a goal, one should take advantage of KMRC-backed mortgages to access a cheaper loan for the house to live on as they boost their financial capabilities for the second house to line in.
Last, but certainly not the least, you recently launched your book Dance with My Money. What was the defining moment or personal experience that inspired you to write Dance with My Money, and how did that shape your core message in the book?
I appreciate you making mention of my book. Yes, we did the launch in February this year, and we have seen some good traction this far. Dance with My Money was inspired by the realization that success in life is not in how much one earns, but rather in how one manages the little that gets into one's hand. This is what the book has christened as The Dance, which inspires the title of Dance with My Money.
Is there any perspective, message, or mindset you would like your readers to focus on in order to better understand your book?
Oh, yes. Dance with My Money posits that the source of one's earning must be nurtured right from where it springs from, which is the revenue-generating relationships that we encounter in our everyday lives. Relationships enable earnings, earnings enable savings, savings enable investments, and investments enable wealth accumulation. This interconnectivity is so profound and unique that it forms the acronym of WISER, thus the WISER concept upon which the book is anchored. We must dance with our money in a wiser way in each of these dance arenas. The book is currently available at the Nuria bookstores, but its audio version is available on our website, https://moneydancetherapy.com. My other book, Dance with My Pension, also touches on the housing conversation in detail, but from the perspective of the mortgage regulations, which were meant to be a blessing for the retirement benefits sector. But the uptake has not been very encouraging. Yet on the other hand, retirees continue to face housing challenges as one of the most significant pain points when they finally retire from active employment.
All right. Thank you, George, for sharing your insightful perspectives on financial literacy and home ownership. We invite our readers to explore Dance with My Money and take the next step toward making wiser financial choices.
Navigating commercial lease complexities, insights from Kwanzaa Estates Limited versus Jomo Kenyatta University of Agriculture and Technology by Diana Nderitu and Joan Mena. In the dynamic realm of commercial real estate, the case of Kwanzaa Estates Limited vs. Jomo Kenyatta, University of Agriculture and Technology, JKUAT, offers a compelling exploration of how unforeseen events can impact contractual obligations in respect to the doctrine of frustration. The doctrine of frustration allows parties to be discharged from their contractual duties when an unexpected event significantly changes the contract's nature, making performance impossible or substantially different from what was initially agreed. Key principles include limitation to narrow circumstances and reliance on events beyond the control or fault of the invoking party, the effect being automatic termination of the contract.
Case overview. In May 2016, JKUAT entered into a six-year lease agreement with Kwanzaa Estates Limited for the Kwanzaa House building in Nakuru Municipality, intending to use the premises for educational purposes. However, significant changes ensued, including a government policy shift that fully sponsored all students meeting university entry requirements, leading to a decline in self-sponsored student enrollment. Additionally, the COVID-19 pandemic necessitated a transition to online learning, further reducing the need for physical space. JKUAT contended that these unforeseen events frustrated the lease, rendering its performance impossible, and sought legal relief. Legal journey. The Environment and Land Court, ELC, initially ruled in favor of JKUAT, declaring the lease frustrated and thus terminated. Kwanzaa Estates Limited appealed this decision. The Court of Appeal overturned the ELC's judgment, emphasizing that the doctrine of frustration should be applied narrowly and that the event cited by JKUAT did not fundamentally alter the nature of the lease agreement to warrant its termination. Subsequently, JKUAT sought to challenge this decision in the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court ruled in favor of the petitioner Kwanzaa Suites, arguing the following.
In this case, the lease fell outside the scope of the landlord and tenant. shops, hotel, and catering establishments. Act. According to Section 57, Subsection 1, Subsection A and B of the Land Act, when a lease does not specify its term and lacks a termination notice provision, it is classified as a periodic lease, with the notice period aligning with the rent payment schedule. However, JKUAT did not cite or rely on this provision when issuing the termination notice. As a result, the unilateral termination breached the lease terms, rendering the notice invalid. Since the lease was not governed by the Landlord and Tenant Act, the court had to refer to case law to determine a fair remedy for terminating a fixed-term lease without a termination clause. The Supreme Court ruled that if one party unilaterally ends the lease, whether by the tenant vacating voluntarily or through eviction by the landlord, this constitutes a breach of contract. While a tenant cannot be forced to remain in premises they no longer wish to occupy, it would also be unreasonable to demand rent for the remaining lease period after they vacate. Therefore, the appropriate remedy includes rent payment up to the date of vacating and potential damages for breach of contract, depending on who is responsible for the termination. Additionally, while the petitioner sought damages for breach, any assessment of such claims should consider whether reasonable steps were taken to mitigate losses.
Implications for commercial leases. This case underscores the importance of understanding the doctrine of frustration in contract law, particularly concerning commercial leases. Frustration only occurs when unforeseen events fundamentally change the nature of a contract, making its performance impossible or radically different from what was agreed upon. Part performance of a contract, or a modification in how the performance of the contract is achieved, cannot be deemed to be frustration. Where perceived disadvantage or economic loss arises as a result of the variation, frustration would not also be applicable. Frustration as a result of a change in law would only succeed where such change renders the purpose of the contract impossible to achieve. As demonstrated, courts apply this doctrine sparingly, requiring a high threshold to be met. Force majeure may also only be imposed during the period in which the force majeure event subsists. And even then, the force majeure events ought to be stated apparent and explicit. If mitigation measures can be implemented to negate the effects of said event, it is paramount that parties also establish this. Where a contract is silent on force majeure provisions, the doctrine of frustration may apply. Depending on the circumstances, courts will be keen to interpret clauses where termination is implied as a whole, and not simply contextualize an ambiguity. Where a lease with a fixed term lacks a termination clause, termination must be by mutual agreement and not a unilateral decision. This case also places the onus on the lessors to equally bear the burden of mitigating their financial losses by demonstrating alternative solutions they sought, such as finding a replacement tenant where a lease is terminated. The implication of fixed-term leases without termination provisions tend to safeguard the lessor's interests. Commercially, a lessee is therefore required to be certain of the period it has contracted. It was unclear whether a termination notice for 3 months as served by JKUAT therefore is permissible where a lease does not contain provisions to terminate. Wouldn't this therefore negate the essence of fixed-term leases? It was also not clarified if a 3 months notice is sufficient for parties to mitigate losses in the face of a perceived force majeure event. Perhaps more clarity in this regard would alleviate the ambiguity.
Key takeaways. Contractual certainty. Parties should strive for clarity in lease agreements, being keen to ensure all clauses are included, and specifically termination clauses that anticipate potential challenges and guide on the manner in which the lease should be terminated. Appropriate remedies should be included within the contract. Lease agreements are the framework on which obligations, rights, and remedies are established. Force majeure clauses, including comprehensive force majeure clauses, can provide guidance on handling unforeseen events, potentially preventing disputes over frustration. Force majeure can only be invoked when such provisions are included in the lease. Legal precedents. This case illustrates that economic challenges or shifts in operational needs may not suffice to establish frustration. A fundamental change affecting the core purpose of the contract is necessary for the termination of a commercial lease. Proactive communication, Maintaining open communication between landlords and tenants can facilitate renegotiation or amendments to leases in response to changing circumstances, potentially avoiding litigation and its costly consequences. In conclusion, the Kwanza Estates Limited versus J. Kuat case serves as a pivotal reference for stakeholders in commercial leasing, highlighting the necessity of meticulous contract drafting and the cautious application of the doctrine of frustration in the face of unforeseen events. Property swaps in Kenya's real estate sector. A practical guide for strategic investors. Article by Ivy Njuguna. Kenya's real estate sector continues to evolve with urbanization, population growth, and shifting investment strategies, reshaping how property transactions are approached. Among the more strategic yet underutilized mechanisms is the concept of property swap, a direct exchange of real estate assets between parties, which offer an alternative path for parties who may prefer not to engage in conventional sales due to liquidity constraints or the high cost of closing sales. In essence, a property swap involves the mutual exchange of real estate assets between two parties. While ideally the properties exchanged are of equivalent value, discrepancies can be resolved by a monetary top-up from one party. This strategy is particularly advantageous when liquidity is limited or when transaction costs in buying and selling are burdensome. This framework enables asset holders to restructure portfolios, unlock equity, or meet changing needs without any delays or financing constraints. Whether you're a landowner, developer, investor, or institution, property swaps provide transactional agility, often reducing exposure to liquidity bottlenecks, prolonged listing periods, and bridging loans. Legally, Section 2 of the Land Act, 2012 recognizes exchange as a mode of land disposition, thereby subjecting property swaps to the same requirements as a standard conveyance under the Land Registration Act, CAP 300, and the Law of Contract Act, CAP 23. Property swaps may seem similar to trading a car, but the process is more involving due to the legal and regulatory requirements. This article delves into different forms of property swaps, their legal underpinnings, tax obligations, and key procedural considerations in the Kenyan context. Common forms of property swaps. Property swaps are not a one-size-fits-all. Their value lies in their adaptability to specific needs depending on the goals and circumstances of the parties involved. Common scenarios include vacant land for developed property. In this instance, a landowner swaps a strategically located parcel of land with a developer in exchange for a ready unit, whether residential or commercial. The developer gains a site for future projects while the landowner bypasses construction costs. Old versus new homes or apartments. This arrangement involves an individual trading in an old home or apartment for a modern replacement. Developers, in return, acquire property for demolition and redevelopment purposes. Residential for commercial property. As urban landscapes shift, formerly residential areas may transition to commercial hubs. Residents in these areas might exchange their homes for residential properties elsewhere, while investors acquire prime land for commercial development, joint venture-oriented swaps. Two parties may exchange properties to jointly pursue a larger development. Instead of one party selling and the other buying, they swap complementary interests in property or development rights to form a joint venture. Following the swap, a joint venture agreement governs their collaboration, covering responsibilities, resource allocation, and revenue sharing. Swaps for debt settlement. Instead of liquidating assets, a debtor may transfer ownership of property to a creditor in satisfaction of a financial obligation. This type of settlement is typically negotiated where the debtor is unable to repay the debt in cash and the creditor is open to accepting a tangible asset of equivalent or near equivalent value in lieu of monetary repayment. Relocation-based exchanges. Relocation-based property swaps are practical solutions for individuals or families moving between different geographic regions, whether for work lifestyle, retirement, or personal reasons, who prefer to exchange properties directly rather than engage in two separate transactions. This eliminates the complexities of selling in one market while buying in another. Sector-specific property swaps. Beyond individual transactions, property swaps can be strategically deployed across various sectors of the economy. Below are key areas where property swaps are increasingly relevant. Real estate development. Landowners can swap land for completed units to avoid cash-intensive purchases. Hospitality and tourism. Hospitality investors can acquire beach or lodge-adjacent land through swaps instead of full-scale purchases. Diaspora investors. Swapping overseas-owned properties or rights with local developers to facilitate reinvestment in Kenya. Affordable housing. Government entities and private developers may exchange parcels to facilitate road expansions, rail networks, utility corridors, or public amenities. For instance, a county government might trade an interior public plot for a developer's roadside parcel required for a highway project. Infrastructure development. Government entities and private developers may exchange parcels to facilitate road expansions, rail networks, utility corridors, or public amenities. For instance, a county government might trade an interior public plot for a developer's roadside parcel required for a highway project. Note: when properties differ in market value, a cash payment is used to equalize the transaction. Legal framework and transaction process. Despite their flexible nature, property swaps must follow established legal requirements to ensure proper transfer of ownership and avoid disputes. Below are the standard steps and legal checkpoints. Identifying a compatible exchange partner. This may involve the services of a real estate agent or developer who can facilitate suitable matches. Compatibility depends on location, property type, market value, and timing. Property valuation. Licensed valuers must assess both properties to establish market value. This determines whether the properties are of equal value and serves as the basis for tax and stamp duty calculations. If unequal, a monetary adjustment can be agreed upon. Contract negotiation. Once valuations are complete, the parties must determine and agree on any cash payments to offset differences in value. Both parties must clearly outline their expectations and obligations during this stage to facilitate a mutually agreeable exchange. Due diligence. Engaging a legal practitioner is highly advisable at this point. Due diligence includes A. Title search and other due diligence formalities from the relevant land registries to verify ownership, property history, and check for encumbrances. B. Confirmation of use to ensure the current land use complies with the swap agreement. C. Any existing litigation attaching to the property. And D. The relevant consents and approvals, such as clearances from lenders if the property is charged. Preparation and execution of legal instruments. This includes drafting and signing relevant documents such as the property swap agreement and property transfer forms under the guidance of advocates. All documents must comply with statutory formalities under the Land Registration Act and signatures witnessed before an advocate. Stamp duty assessment and payment. The recipient of each property must pay stamp duty at 4% for properties located in urban areas and 2% for rural properties on the assessed market value of the properties in exchange. Each party pays based on the value of the property they are acquiring and not the one they are disposing of. Registration and handover. After stamp duty has been paid and the transfer document stamped, the documents are lodged at the relevant land registry for registration. Upon registration, parties receive new title deeds, and possession can be formally handed over. If monetary compensation is involved, payment should be made before or as stipulated in the agreement. Capital gains tax, CGT. The party disposing of a property must assess and remit capital gains tax at 15% of the net gain. It is calculated as the difference between the property's adjusted acquisition cost and current market value. The 8th Schedule to the Income Tax Act provides the due date for CGT payment to be the earlier of the receipt of the full purchase price or the registration of the transfer. In such cases involving property swaps, CGT is applicable on the profit made from the transfer of property, so if there's a gain from the exchange, it will be taxable, and the tax CGT liability is triggered at the latter of the two dates. Why opt for a property swap? When executed correctly, swaps offer distinct advantages over conventional sales, including A. The simplified process eliminates the wait for a buyer and the need to secure financing for a new purchase. B, there is reduced need for liquidity. Therefore, parties can acquire new property without the requirement to mobilize significant cash. C, once due diligence and valuations are complete, a swap can close faster than parallel sale purchase transactions that depend on third-party financing. D, property swaps often exclude lenders, as transactions typically occur without bank financing, thus minimizing exposure to interest rate risks, delays in disbursement, or rejected loan applications. E, facilitates instant transformation of underperforming assets such as vacant land into income-generating properties, including rentals or serviced apartments. F, the process is flexible, especially if the properties are not of equal value. The difference can be covered through negotiated compensation. Additionally, the flexibility to incorporate phased payments, equity partnerships, or future development rights adds significant strategic value to such transactions. What are the risks and practical challenges in a property swap? Despite their advantages, property swaps are not without drawbacks, such as A, identifying a party with a property of similar value, location, and purpose is not always easy, particularly in niche markets. B, differing valuations can cause friction where a party is unable or unwilling to pay the difference in value, or a dispute arising from differing opinions on the value of a property. C, where a party is required to pay a balancing figure, the risk of default must be mitigated through escrow arrangements or payment guarantees. D, incomplete due diligence may expose parties to unregistered interests, restrictive covenants, or pending litigation on the property. E, even without a cash exchange, CGT applies if there's a gain on paper. Parties should seek tax structuring advice before finalizing terms.
Conclusion. While property swaps provide a creative and sometimes more feasible route to real estate acquisition or disposal, the decision to proceed should be well informed. Each case requires a thorough evaluation of not only the properties involved, but also of the legal, financial, and practical dimensions of the transaction. It is essential to ensure the property is suitable and free from encumbrances, and that its location, condition, and development potential align with your goals. For developers, a property requiring demolition may still hold promise if its location supports redevelopment into high-value units. Ultimately, property swaps offer a valuable alternative to traditional sales for individuals, investors, and developers alike. But success hinges on rigorous due diligence and sound legal guidance throughout the process. Making the right choice when appointing a trustee. Author, Shalma E. N. Mayner.
Introduction. The effectiveness of a family trust depends largely on its administration by the Board of Trustees. The trustee plays a pivotal role, and the decision of whom to appoint is among the most consequential a founder can make. Entrusted with fiduciary duties, the trustee must manage trust assets prudently, act in the best interests of the beneficiaries, and faithfully carry out the founder's intentions in accordance with the trust deed. When selecting trustees, the founder is faced with a critical choice: whether to appoint a trusted individual or engage a professional corporate trustee. This decision can significantly impact the long-term success and sustainability of the trust. In this article, we explore the key considerations to help you make the right call.
Role of the trustee. Before weighing the options, it is important to understand the role a trustee plays within a trust structure. At its core, a trustee is responsible for managing the trust assets in line with the terms of the trust deed and in the best interest of the beneficiaries. This includes safeguarding the assets, exercising discretion where applicable, keeping accurate trust records, and ensuring compliance with fiduciary duties as per the deed. In essence, the trustee forms the backbone of the trust, ensuring its effectiveness and continuity. Appointing an individual trustee as one of the trustees of your trust often feels like the natural choice. These are people you know intimately, whose values you recognize, respect, and likely share. They may be your children, siblings, relatives, or a lifelong friend with whom you have a meaningful history. At a minimum, an individual trustee must be an adult of sound mind, However, you can tailor the criteria for the appointment of trustees to reflect your priorities. For instance, you may stipulate that a trustee must hold a university degree or demonstrate a proven track record of financial responsibility before becoming eligible to serve. Where appropriate, your board of trustees can also include your lawyer or a professional with trust administration expertise. Not only do they bring legal and financial acumen to the table, but they also play a crucial role in guiding the trust across generations, explaining the settlers' wishes, onboarding new trustees, and supporting the smooth induction of future family members into the trust's governance framework.
Key qualities to look for in an individual trustee: integrity and trustworthiness. They must be someone you can rely on to act consistently, honestly, and in good faith, especially in moments when no one is watching. Accountability. A trustee must be dependable and transparent in their actions. They should maintain clear records, update beneficiaries where needed, and be open to oversight, especially by the founder during their lifetime, who can monitor performance and, if necessary, reconstitute the board. Commitment and availability. Trusteeship is not a ceremonial title. It demands time, energy, and sustained engagement. The ideal trustee is present and proactive in their role. Discretion. Trustees will often deal with sensitive family and financial matters. Confidentiality is essential. Your family's business should not become public knowledge. Longevity and stability. As far as possible, choose someone in good health and of sound judgment who can serve for the long term. Alternatively, you can pair them with successors to ensure continuity of governance. Emotional intelligence, a valuable bonus. Especially in family trusts, the ability to manage emotions, navigate family dynamics, and foster harmony is a major asset. Sometimes, what a trust needs most is not just a strong mind, but a steady heart.
Understanding the corporate trustee option. While individual trustees bring personal familiarity and emotional connection, corporate trustees offer something just as critical: structure stability, and professional oversight. A corporate trustee is typically a company regulated under trust law, such as a professional trustee corporation, bank trust division, or a law firm with fiduciary services. These institutions are staffed with professionals who bring experience in estate planning, accounting, tax, legal compliance, asset management, and beneficiary relations. Unlike individuals, corporate trustees do not fall ill, retire, relocate, or pass away, ensuring the trust's long-term stability while preventing administrative disruptions. This makes them particularly attractive for multi-generational trusts or in situations where family dynamics are complex, strained, or emotionally charged. Recently, there has been a notable uptake in the use of corporate trustee services in Kenya, especially among Kenyans in the diaspora who seek a reliable professional body to manage trust assets at home. Corporate trustees are also a practical solution for single parents with minor children who wish to safeguard their wealth through a professionally managed trust until the child is of age and able to serve as trustee. They offer vital continuity in scenarios involving an adult-only child who may not yet have heirs, or in families with vulnerable beneficiaries, such as those struggling with substance dependency, mental incapacity, or disabilities, where appointing them as trustees would not be appropriate. In such cases, a corporate trustee offers dependable and objective leadership with an unwavering focus on protecting the interests of the living beneficiaries. Key advantages of appointing a corporate trustee include impartiality. Corporate trustees offer a level of neutrality that is often difficult for individual trustees with familial ties to maintain. Their detachment helps to uphold both fairness and transparency, especially in emotionally charged situations where familiarity might otherwise breed tension or resentment. Continuity and succession. Corporate trustees provide stable, long-term administration of the trust, ensuring the settlers' wishes are consistently upheld across generations. Unlike individual trustees whose involvement may be affected by personal or life circumstances, a corporate trustee remains constant even as families grow, change, and face new dynamics. Their ongoing presence allows them to guide, reaffirm, and effectively communicate the founder's intentions to each new generation, preserving the trust's purpose while adapting to the family's evolving needs. Compliance and record keeping. Corporate trustees ensure timely filing of annual tax returns with the Kenya Revenue Authority and maintain proper records, including trustee minutes and beneficiary reports. They also handle the filing of annual returns with the registrar, keeping the trust in good standing and compliant with regulatory requirements. Support for individual trustees. In blended structures, corporate trustees can act as anchor institutions, providing technical and legal support to individual trustees while reducing administrative burdens. Expertise and governance. Corporate trustees operate within a framework of internal checks and balances, policies and systems that ensure decisions are made prudently and professionally, reducing the risk of mismanagement or conflict of interest. Of course, corporate trustees offer their services at a cost. Their responsiveness and quality of service vary, so it is essential to vet their credentials and track record before appointing one. The best of both worlds, a blended approach. In many cases, a hybrid model where both individual and corporate trustees are appointed offers the best of both worlds. The individual trustee brings familiarity, empathy, and an understanding of the family's values and dynamics. The corporate trustee, on the other hand, contributes professional expertise, regulatory compliance, if any, and long-term continuity. A hybrid model allows for collaborative governance, where each trustee plays to their strengths. The corporate trustee can handle administrative, legal, and financial aspects, while the individual trustee offers perspective on family matters, cultural considerations, or the unique needs of the beneficiaries. Blended boards are particularly effective in multi-generational trusts, where long-term continuity is key. Complex estates with significant assets or diverse investments. Families that value personal involvement, but recognize the need for professional oversight. Ultimately, this approach allows for balance and flexibility, ensuring the trust remains well-managed and aligned with the settlers' intentions over time.
Conclusion. Choosing the right trustee is one of the most consequential decisions you'll make when setting up a family trust. Whether you opt for an individual, a corporate entity, or a blended model, the goal remains the same: to protect your legacy and ensure your wishes are honored with integrity, diligence, and care. Take time to reflect on your priorities, assess the strengths and limitations of those around you, and do not hesitate to seek professional guidance where needed. The right trustee can safeguard not only your estate, but also the relationships and values that matter most to you for generations to come.
Does a foreigner have to be married to Kenyan to acquire property in Kenya? A common misconception persists around the notion that foreigners must marry Kenyan citizens to acquire property in Kenya. This belief has unfortunately led many into marriages that are not based in good faith, often resulting in significant financial and emotional loss. However, the truth is that marriage to a Kenyan is not a legal requirement for a foreigner to own property in Kenya. There are clear legal provisions in place that allow foreigners to own property without being tied to a marital relationship. This article explores these legal frameworks and other aspects relating to foreigners' property ownership in Kenya. Legal framework for foreign property ownership in Kenya. A. The Constitution of Kenya. The supreme law of the land, the Constitution of Kenya 2010, outlines the parameters within which a foreigner can own land in Kenya. Article 65 of the Constitution specifically provides that non-citizens may acquire and own land in Kenya, but only under leasehold tenure, and for a period not exceeding 99 years. This means that while foreigners cannot hold land under a freehold title, which provides perpetual ownership, they can still lawfully acquire leasehold interests for long-term ownership. It is also important to note that under the Constitution, the term foreigner extends not just to natural persons, but also to legal persons, companies, or entities that are wholly or predominantly foreign-owned. This implies that a company incorporated in Kenya, but whose shareholding is entirely or majority held by non-Kenyans, will be treated as a foreigner for the purposes of land ownership. B. Land laws. It is important to note that Section 12A of Land Act highlights the aspect of controlled land which includes land within 25 kilometers of the Kenyan border, land in the first or second row from the high water mark along the Indian Ocean, and lastly, any land classified as controlled under existing laws or regulations. Foreigners or corporate entities regarded as foreigners are prohibited from owning such controlled land. Property ownership between foreign and Kenyan spouses. While marriage is not a prerequisite for property ownership, foreign nationals married to Kenyan citizens may still wish to acquire property jointly. In such genuine marital arrangements, there are two common forms of ownership: joint tenancy. Both spouses own the property equally, and it passes automatically to the surviving spouse upon death. This is governed by Section 91, Subsection 3A of the Land Registration Act. Tenancy in common, each spouse holds a distinct share in the property, which can be passed on to heirs independently. Alternative ownership structures. Couples may also choose to hold property through family-owned companies or family trusts. The trustee's perpetual succession cap, 164, provides for the registration of a family trust in Kenya. In essence, a registered family trust enjoys corporate status and is one of the most effective estate planning tools in Kenya. On the other hand, a family-owned company, a private limited liability company, in which the shareholding is fully held by family members and is governed by the provisions of the Companies Act of 2015 Kenya, and equally enjoys corporate status and may be used for holding the family assets. In conclusion, foreigners do not need to marry Kenyan citizens to own property in Kenya. The most critical step any foreigner considering property investment in Kenya can take is to engage a qualified legal professional. Proper legal guidance helps to navigate the regulatory landscape, avoid common pitfalls, and ensure that property acquisition is done within the legal framework. This way, foreigners or foreign investors can confidently own property in Kenya without necessarily being subjected to misinformation, legal uncertainty, or unnecessary emotional entanglements.
Understanding E-RITs. What Kenya's new rental tax system means for property owners. Kenya Revenue Authority, KRA, has unveiled a new digital platform known as the Electronic Rental Income Tax System, which is designed to modernize the way landlords file and pay taxes on rental income. This initiative is part of a broader national effort to improve tax administration, particularly within the real estate sector. By introducing E-RITs, the government aims to widen the tax base, reduce reliance on cumbersome paperwork, and make tax compliance more accessible to property owners and managers across the country. While the platform offers increased efficiency and convenience for landlords and agents, it also introduces a higher level of regulatory oversight, signaling a more robust approach to enforcement and accountability in rental income taxation. The advantages of using E-RITs. Accessible via e-citizen and integrated API options for larger property managers, E-RITs digitizes rental tax obligations, covering calculations, submissions, and payments. Here's what it offers. Real-time automation. Rental tax is calculated automatically. Real-time access. File and pay taxes at your convenience. Less paperwork. Fewer errors and no physical forms. Fairer assessments, increased accuracy, and less back and forth with KRA. Alongside the E-RITs launch, the Treasury revised the monthly rental income, MRI, tax rate in January 2024, bringing it down from 10% to 7.5% for annual incomes between 288,000 Kenyan shillings and 15 million Kenyan shillings. Why E-RITs matters? It removes a major barrier that discouraged landlords from registering and supports voluntary participation in the formal tax system. Key stats, financial year 2023/2024 saw collections rise to 14.4 billion Kenyan shillings, a 5.2% increase. Yet estimates suggest Kenya could collect over 100 billion Kenyan shillings annually from rental income. A wide compliance gap still remains. E-RITS is designed to close it. Despite its features, E-RITS may face several adoption challenges, such as 1. Informal rental market dynamics. As of now, fewer than 175,000 landlords were officially listed in Kenya, according to a survey done by Center for Affordable Housing Finance, CAHF, in 2023, from a data set prepared by 71.4, a consulting firm. A 2023 Kenya National Bureau of Statistics report showed that 7 out of 10 tenants don't have written leases. This lack of documentation makes tax validation challenging. 2. Limited awareness and optional use. Currently, the use of E-RITS remains voluntary, which has lessened the sense of urgency among small-scale landlords to adopt the system. This is especially true in rural areas, where many property owners are either unaware of the platform or unsure how to navigate it effectively. The lack of awareness has been compounded by limited outreach and public education efforts. For E-RITS to achieve its intended impact, the Kenya Revenue Authority will need to invest in extensive training and awareness campaigns to ensure landlords across the country understand how to use the system and why it matters. How E-RITS fits into the bigger tax picture. The rollout of E-RITS is part of a broader national strategy to digitize and modernize revenue collection. Some of the strategic initiatives include 1. GIS mapping, used to identify unregistered rental properties, especially in urban areas. 2. Block-based compliance checks. Through KRA's block management strategy, the Revenue Authority seeks to enhance transparency in tax enforcement by leveraging blockchain technology. Lastly, banking and finance collaboration, leveraging property loan data for verification of rental income data. These steps aim to ensure equity in taxation while modernizing enforcement tools. One of the key outcomes of implementing E-RITS is tighter monitoring of rental income. High-value landlords and those owning multiple properties are likely to experience increased audit activity, as the system grants the Kenya Revenue Authority greater visibility into property-based earnings. This enhanced oversight allows for more accurate assessments and targeted enforcement. However, challenges remain, particularly within the informal rental market. Landlords operating in underserved or rural areas may still fall outside the formal tax system. Without targeted outreach and support, these property owners risk being excluded from the benefits of formalization, and the broader goal of equitable tax compliance may remain only partially fulfilled. In summary, E-RITS is more than just a new tool. It is a shift in how rental income will be taxed in Kenya moving forward. If you're a landlord or involved in property management, start aligning your operations with digital filing and make use of the new reduced tax rate while it lasts. Lastly, take advantage of automation to ensure accurate and timely compliance. Do you want to make the transition easier? We assist property owners in navigating new tax tools like electronic rental income tax system. Our service offerings include E-RITS system setup and navigation, e-citizen support and iTax accounts, tax planning, and rental income compliance.